Today is August 17th, 2011. This is Jack Crawford, graduate student at the University of Texas at Austin at the H.J. Lutscher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports, Institute for Olympic Studies. As part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Oral History Project, I'm interviewing Ron Freeman over the phone about his experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Hi, Mr. Freeman. How are you?
Fine, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. You as well. Where are we talking to you from?
I'm in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Nice. And is Ron Freeman, is that your birth name?
My full name is Ronald Freeman, but it was cut down when I went to Arizona State to Ron Freeman.
All right. When and where were you born?
In New Jersey.
In New Jersey. And so is that where you grew up?
Yes, I grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
And so living in New Jersey, how did you first get involved in sports?
Well, again, I was in a very poor community, but, you know, all of my friends played a variety of sports, from in the 60s and the 50s, from tennis to sandlot football to basketball, stickball. As kids, we played. As we got older, some of my friends and I, we broke out into specific sports. I had a couple of friends that wound up playing pro football, a couple that wound up playing pro baseball. One went to Forest Hills, and I went to the Olympic Games. So it was just, growing up at a time where we had the opportunity to play sports, and sports became our dream because all of us went to college through sports.
Through sports, nice. And did you have any, like, major influences or heroes at the time?
No, at that time, sports wasn't that heavily played on television. I mean, I guess my best influences were my parents, my mother and father. My motivators. I was fortunate enough to have people around me that have motivated me different ways, and they were one or two of my friends who were who motivated me a great deal to do the best that I could do in high school. And I had a coach that took me to a level that I never thought that I would reach, a high school coach, George Michaelides.
Nice. So sports basically enabled you to get into college?
Sports didn't enable me to get into college. It enabled me to go to college through having more than 200 scholarship offers. When I was in high school at 17, I became the number one high school 440-yard athlete in the world. And that opened up some doors. Without having scholarship offers, it was looking pretty bleak on me going to college or university at that time because of my family did not have the money.
All right. So was track your main sport while you were in college?
Yes, track was my only sport while I was in college.
What were you studying?
Pre-law and psychology.
How was your course load? Did you have a lot of work compared to, say, like your training time?
Yeah, I took an average course load. I think at that time it was anywhere between, and it fluctuated between 15 to 17 hours a semester.
And so leading up to the Olympics, what was your, did you have any, I guess, special competitions that brought you to the attention of the Olympics?
No, not anything special. I went to Arizona State University, which was a very large school, so we competed against UCLA, Southern Cal, you know, Washington State. So I was pretty much set up competitively, competition-wise. However, you know, there was two Olympic trials going that year.
And how did you do at the team trials?
First trials, didn't make the team. Second trials, I made the team.
As were there any problems or challenges at the trials, or?
No problems, no challenges. The second trials was held in altitude, and I was prepared for it. The first trial was held below altitude.
Ah. So, how do you, did you do any special training for the altitude?
Yes, the U.S. Track and Field Association, put us in altitude, in Colorado and other high altitude spots to do some competitions and training. And that's how we prepared for Mexico in altitude and, Lake Tahoe area.
All right. Do you think that the altitude helped you, or was it your training and preparation?
Did the altitude? I don't know if it helped us, but it prepared us to run in high altitude. If we were not prepared to run in high altitude, it may have been difficult for us as we were acclimated through training in Tahoe.
Right. Now, there was a lot of things going on prior to 1968. Do you remember anything about, there was an Olympic project for human rights and a Harvard crew letter? There was like...
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, human rights, yeah.
Right.
A project for human rights, certainly. And I know a lot about that project. They were in the Harvard rowing team. They were very supportive of what the black athletes were going to do as far as to promote certain issues and initiatives during the games. The Harvard rowing team was right there in full support of us.
So do you remember any particular protests or boycotts that were talked about?
I can remember one thing that sticks to me is a meeting that we had in Mexico City. And during that meeting about what actions were going to be taken during the games, the Harvard rowing team members were there. Now, certainly, there was a proposed boycott of the 68 Olympic Games, which we threatened, the black athletes threatened not to attend the games. And that was headed up by Dr. Harry Edwards. But most of us did attend the Olympic Games. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did not attend the games. He was one.
Right. So what were your thoughts about that letter, and how did that affect you?
Pardon?
What were your thoughts about the letter and the efforts of the Harvard crew letter?
It just showed that a group of folks, a group of people, really knew and felt what the athletes, a certain segment of athletes, were concerned about, and they supported us. I mean, I don't remember exactly the total letter, but I know that they were present and they supported our efforts. To just show the world that it was a human rights thing that we were into. We want to show the world that we were people too, basically.
Right.
And each one of us had our own take on the human rights stand. John and Tommy had theirs. Lee and I and Vince and Larry had ours. Bob Beeman has theirs. I mean, his. And so there were different athletes that protested in different ways.
Do you remember?
All for human rights.
Right. Do you remember if you actually received the letter?
If I did what?
If you received one of the letters from the Harvard
group? No. I can't remember receiving it. I do remember, I believe we did. And you know, John and Tommy. Well, I'm not, you know, there was so much mail coming in and I didn't even, you know, print materials. I can't say I received it or not. Probably did, but I can't say it.
There was also some other events that happened in Mexico. One was with the student protests and violence in Mexico City. It was like 10 days before the start of the games. Do you remember?
Yeah, as soon as we got there, there was a big demonstration, a couple of people got killed, yeah. Big protests. You know, it was sad. It was sad. I remember that.
Did you see any like extra security measures or any evidence of what was going on?
Yes, there was extra security there, but it really you know, I enjoyed my time in Mexico. I enjoyed the city. I enjoyed the people. We were not limited to where we could go or what we could see, so that did not hinder us at all. It was, but it was security. And we did, you know, read about, hear about, and see the protests on television while we were there, you know, right a few days after we got here. That's it.
Yeah. So what were your impressions of Mexico City?
It's a beautiful city. I think, again, that was my first and only change. So Mexico City meant a great deal to me. Still means a great deal to me, and I was impressed at the way the games were pulled off. Again, that was my first game, so within that feeling, I had nervousness, apprehension, and everything else going on while I prepared to compete in the largest event that I ever competed for in my life.
Did you get to venture out into the city or go sightseeing, anything like that?
Oh, yes. We didn't go outside of the city, but we did go in the city, and you know, we did our shopping and things of that sort. Yes.
Did you meet anyone? Did you need a translator, or how did that go?
Didn't need a translator. Met a lot of people from a lot of different countries, but didn't need a translator.
So, what did you think of the event venues and the athletic facilities there?
Again, that was my first Olympic Games. I was excited to be there. The venues to me were good venues. The housing to me was good housing, and the food and the way everything was operated. Again, I had no complaints about the way the games were put on. I did have a complaint about the way that John and Tommy were treated. But, you know, other than that, as far as the facilitation of the games, it was a great game.
Right. Now, you were referring to how they were treated by sending them home, or what were your feelings?
Well, yes, how they were treated by sending them home, yes. I don't think it was clear. I don't think what they did warranted them being expelled from the Olympic Games, you know, just because of the freedom of speech. And I didn't see anything that they did wrong. I think that, you know, 30 years later, 40 years later, it proves that they didn't do anything wrong by the way they are being treated now. I can remember some years ago that Coca-Cola approached John and Tommy about doing a commercial, you know, of them on the victory stand. So, I mean, when you're talking about human rights and you're talking about, you know, telling the world the true story, and you do tell the story and you're a good person, I don't think that they should, you know, that should warrant anything negative. And once again, it's been proven over time that what they did then in 68 was not a bad thing. I mean, that's proven right today.
Right. So were they the first ones to do their salute?
To do a protest at Olympic Games?
Well, to do the Black Power salute. Were they the first ones?
Mexico City.
Yeah, if in Mexico City.
To the best of my knowledge, yeah, they were the first one to do something at Mexico City. I think that a Polish swimmer, I'm not too mistaken, she did something, lowered her hair. Her head was when the Russian national anthem was played. You know, there may have been a couple other things. Again, you know, other athletes did other things. You know, but you know, during that Mexico City, but I'm believing they were the first to do something.
Yeah, because I'm looking at a photo of Lee Evans, you, Larry James, and Vince Matthews, and you're holding your fists up.
Yes.
And so did that happen after the other two were already sent home?
Right. I also have a DVD of that also.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. What you can do with the DVD, you can go on to, you probably can go to YouTube and pick it up off of YouTube. Or if Tom does not have the DVD, let him contact me and I'll try to get a copy out to him.
Okay.
If you want to use it.
Okay.
But I think he might have one.
All right. Did you attend the opening ceremony?
Yes, we did.
And what did you think of that?
Awesome. It was so awesome that out of the 100,000 people that were sitting in the victory stand, Lee Evans came over to me and said he saw my mother and father sitting in the audience. And I went over after we broke up and said hello to them. That's how awesome it was. But yeah, it was an awesome event, the opening ceremony.
Nice. And so your event was the 400 meters?
The 400 meter open and the 4x400 meter relay.
Where was it held?
In the big stadium in Mexico City, where the opening ceremonies was held.
Do you remember any special last minute training or preparation before your event?
No.
No.
Just, you know, no.
Can
I went there to win. That's all. So I was, you know, just did my tune-up on my races and was ready to go. But my coaches, I didn't have a coach that was there. That, you know, my college coach wasn't there, so I was basically just there. You know.
Yeah. Can you describe your event?
Like, can I describe my event?
Yeah, from when you you're approaching the starting line, things that were going through your mind.
I was pretty, I was nervous in the open. And in the finals, I did have lane number one, which is not a good lane to have in a final event, and particularly a final event of the biggest event in the world. But I dealt with that. And gun went off. I looked at about 100 meters out. 150 meters out, I was in last place. But I didn't panic, but I knew I had a pretty good catch. So 200 meters ago, I started rolling and made a move and ended up third. Lee, all of us broke a world record, you know, so... But ended up third. I think that was the only sweep in the Olympic Games. I'm not sure, but that being the only 1, 2, 3, and we all broke the world record. And I think today I still have the fastest time ever run in lane one.
Yeah, that's amazing. How do you feel, about your performance, especially at the altitude, do you think?
How do I feel? I feel great. I mean, it's, the Olympic Games is, it's a model. You don't go there to win, you just go there to be in it, to participate. So, in any given day, I could have been first, or Larry could have been first on any given day, in Olympic Games. So I was happy that it turned out that I was there. And I felt proud that I could represent my people and my country.
So you got third place. You won the bronze medal in the men's 400-meter open. And then,
correct.
And then you ran the second leg in the 4x400-meter relay.
Yeah. Now that was a special. That was a special day. That was real special.
Can you tell me more about that?
I was 10 meters back when I got the stick. We were slated to win the world, set the world record, break the world record in that event. We knew we had the fastest four athletes in the world. But when I got to the baton, I was 10 meters back because the leadoff man wasn't feeling too well. So with 10 meters back, I realized I had to go out like I never did before, and I think I opened up, and again, this might be on YouTube, I went from 10 meters back to about 25 to 30 meters ahead on the home stretch, and ran the fastest relay split ever in the history of the Olympic Games, and that split stood for about 25 years. So that's, I was happy for that to happen. I think that any one of the athletes, Larry and Lee, in the same situation, could have ran the same time. 10 meters back, blowing it out. So I was special there. I think that Larry and Lee, and it's the same setup. It was a great, beautiful setup for me to be behind an African athlete and have control of him to really be in a situation I can catch him and roll to the finish line. The other thing that really has not been talked about, that particular race, it wasn't that we just broke the world record by 3 seconds, which drug-free, which has not been done since in any Olympic Games, but the relay pass that we used has never been done since we've done it, and we used a 4x100-meter relay, blind relay pass, which, if you go on YouTube, you can see that we didn't look. We looked back once, and we went out, meaning that the athlete coming in had to come in just as if they were starting. You had to run full speed. You had to run through the zone. There was no slowdown, and that has never been done in the history of the Olympic Games since we've done it.
Wow. Do you know of any reason why that would be? Seems like they would want to emulate, you know, your success.
Well, if you break a world record by 3 seconds and you look at the athletes that have done it, I would think that anybody would want to use the same relay pass. But that relay pass, you know, you have to be, you know, you need four athletes that are in tune with each other and that are in the best condition, the best shape. So while the records have been broken tenths of a second by tenths of a second over the years, some which were, which has been proven to have one or more people on a team that were doing drugs, which, by the way, I don't know where our record stands, because if a person is caught on a relay team doing drugs, that record is kicked out. And so there were several teams. So we might be listed as the 10th fastest now, but we still could be number one just for the drug thing. I'm not sure. You might want to do some research on that.
Yeah.
You might want to do some research on unbanned substance races. And if one person had used drugs on a team, that record is supposed to be null and void.
Right. Do you remember if you received or if you were aware of any testing, like for banned substances?
I think the possibility might have been there, but we did not get tested. I think the next year got tested, to tell you the truth. 72.
Yeah. What are your feelings on athletes using substances like that?
Well, again, it's been happening, not only in America, but around the world, and I think that the difference today than yesterday was that we were there. As an athlete in the 60s, me, there was a lot of things going on. Martin Luther King died. JFK had died. And we were activists for peace. We were activists then. Athletes today are businessmen. The difference between the athlete of yesterday and today is that I still get in contact with Carlos and Beeman and Bill Toomey and James, Dick Fosbury. We all stay in contact, where the athletes today, they don't keep in contact with each other. So our whole motivation wasn't actually money. You know, we went there to do our thing and to put on a good show for the world. When you put money into the mix, it motivates athletes, not only on Olympic level, but on a high school level. You'd be appalled to find out how many high school football players and wrestlers and other athletes are doing steroids. That low. And why? Because it's because of the dollar. So something has to be done. I don't think that the drugs will be taken out of the game, because you can flip a drug a different way. If you say H2O is water, all you have to do is change that molecule around one way, and you won't be able to identify it as water. And that's what they're doing to steroids. So, how I feel, hey, it doesn't matter how I feel, as long as it's still going to be in the mix in all sports across the board.
All right. Do you remember the interactions that you had with, say, other U.S. teammates or other national teams?
Interactions, we were there with a couple of different things. One, we knew we were going to protest on the biggest stage in the world. We were going to be on NBC or ABC. Everybody, millions of people, going to be watching us. So we know that we are going to do our thing. So we're going to get some backlash for that. The other thing is working with athletes. Certainly, we were friends of all Olympians, and it was the first time that I was exposed to my African brothers and sisters. So I was just elated of being able to talk to Kipchoge Keino and some other African athletes. I was just elated at that opportunity. So I was, trading shirts and other things like that, or to meet somebody from Germany, or to hang out with somebody from Russia, So certainly as Olympians, we had a great time just meeting all these folks.
Yeah, did you have any experiences with Soviet athletes?
Certainly, we had experience with some of the Soviet athletes at the time, even though there was a problem. I think that the Olympic Games, they transcend all politics, even though we were politicking of what we were to do. But, that did not bother me. Whether you were Soviet or any of that, it didn't bother me. You're an Olympian. We're here on the stage of sport. Let's do this sport, and after which you go home to your own politics.
Yeah. So, about the media, do you think that did you get extra attention after the event? Say, like after you did your salute, or.
Media were coming up and asking us about the question about John and Tommy, but other than that, we did a couple of interviews, but media today isn't, yesterday wasn't, isn't like media today.
Right, so you said the media's main focus was on Tommy Smith and John Carlos.
Basically.
Do you think that attention was because of the IOC's response? Or?
Yes, yeah. Of course.
So do you have any other memorable or interesting events, experiences that you had during your event?
Again, there was a gala after the event where the Olympians got together, and it was a time for us just to cool down and relax and enjoy our Olympic teammates from America. So that was a memorable time. I think gifts were given out, raffle gifts were giving out at that time. But the experience of being in a competition of that level with folks who you know might have been swimmers or boxers or other that people might not have met, but you're on the same team from the same country, was very memorable to me.
So you attended the closing ceremony?
No, I didn't do that.
Did you watch it or?
I may have watched it.
Yeah. Was there any reason for not attending it?
No, just too many people. You got to wait to go in, too many people getting out,
So what did you do right after the games?
I went back to New Jersey. Had a great homecoming. My city of Elizabeth turned out, and at the airport, I had a Ron Freeman day at a high school football game, and a big dinner at my church, and that was like in October sometime, and then in January I went back to school, Arizona State University.
So you went back to finish your degree?
Yes.
Now, what degree did you end up with?
Bachelor's of Arts in Political Science.
So when you returned, what was the reaction of, like, say, your friends and family, or, you know?
Well, everybody was excited and loving me. The community turned out. It was a positive reaction all across the board. It's a little quite different than John and Tommy, and I think Lee. But because he, you know, went to San Jose with them, unfortunately, they did not have that type of honoring when they got back. They should have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had the people in my hometown, they really supported me and turned out.
What happened with your athletic career after the games? Did you pursue it any further?
Yeah, I kind of ran a year or so, but, you know, my motivation was really to get a scholarship, to run track, to get a scholarship, to go to college. So I accomplished that. And then, by the way, I'm in college. Being that I'm here, I want to take a shot on making an Olympic team, and I did that. So at the Olympic Games, where many people really were into it and wanted to make another team or two, I was not that motivated. But I did finish college, and after that, I was still running, but then I went back and got a master's degree. So that was my, and then I just waned away from the sport.
Nice. What do you think, how do you think your life would be different if you had not been an athlete in that sport?
Don't know, really. The same motivation that it took me to win a scholarship. I mean, I was number one in the world as a high school athlete out of high school at 17. If that hadn't happened, just say that I had the same motivation, that I tried hard the same way, but I wasn't number one in the world, I think I would have had that same thing in me, and I really believe I would have been successful in another way. Now, if that energy, motivation, and fortitude, and other characteristics that makes you a winner was not in me, I don't know. But I dreamed a lot. I prayed a lot. And I worked my ass off a lot under odds. You see, when I was born, I was the size of the palm of your hand, and I was less than 4 pounds when I was born. And I had several operations during the first 2 years of my life when I was born. when I was 17 in October of my senior year. The doctor, heart doctor, told me that I could not run anymore or participate in high school sports because I had a heart problem. So from October to December, I did not even participate in sports because of the medical reasons. But then someone paid $300, a lawyer paid $300 so that I can have an exam to see how the valves of my heart would, which would either confirm that I could not compete in track and field or high school physical education, or that I could. It just turned out that I could. So there were a lot of things in my life that occurred, and that I've overcome the odds through the graces of God that allowed me to get to where I am today. I was not a natural sprinter. I was not a natural athlete. As a matter of fact, when I was my junior in high school, I was focused on being a middle distance runner. But when I was not allowed to run for 4 months my senior year in high school, I only had the strength to do the 400 meters the rest of that year, so that's what I did, and it turned out that way. So by the grace of God, you know, I think we all are led by the grace of God to do what, you know, what we do, you know. And so if it had turned out any way that I didn't go to Olympic Games, I think I would have been successful in some of the ways that I am. And but I don't know how, you know, I don't know what that would mean. I might have, I don't know, been a great teacher and still been just as proud, or, you know, maybe a great minister and just, you know, something like that, and be just as proud.
Do you still run today for
fitness? No, I don't run. No, I walk a lot, but I don't run.
Yeah. Did you continue to run for fitness or recreation after college?
Not really. I mean, after college, I ran on a couple of track clubs, and you know, but I was working, had a family, running a track club, so I really couldn't put the time in. I tried to take shortcuts, you know, running half a week and racing, but I couldn't do it, so I just, you know, then went back to grad school, so I just lost the time.
So what advice would you give to today's Olympic hopeful?
Olympic hopeful, just follow your dream and put the work in, and whatever you put in, you're going to get out. So, I mean, Olympic hopeful, it's great to have a dream, you know, but you can't take shortcuts. The biggest thing I would tell Olympic hopefuls today in any sport, you can't take shortcuts. Now, that's going to be hard for many of them to understand when they see other people taking shortcuts in any sport, summer or winter Olympic games. You don't try to take shortcuts.
Did you have any, you kind of touched on amateurism before. Did you have any experiences with, I guess, you know, gifts or endorsements or somebody trying to sponsor you with equipment?
No, that didn't come up at that day because, you know, it was a double-edged sword. You get anything, you lose your scholarship.
All right.
Okay. Now, we did get money under the table. Everybody got some dollars under the table during that time from shoe companies.
Right.
I guess I can tell you now. You know, but everybody was getting dollars when not everybody, but, you know, folks were getting dollars from shoe companies to wear Adidas or Puma, basically, during that time.
Yeah, it seems now it's a little more open with athletes receiving money.
Right.
What are your thoughts on this? Is it okay for athletes to receive gifts and money and shoes?
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, you're a professional. When you go to college, I firmly believe if you get a scholarship, if you get a $40,000 a year scholarship to go to college for 4 years, and they're giving you $40,000 a year in education, if that isn't professional, I don't know. You know, or more. Yeah. And then on top of that, you win a football, they win a college, wins a Super Bowl, they make millions of dollars off of you playing off that $40,000 scholarship. Why shouldn't you get some money? Why do you have to be poor? Well, you know, I just don't understand that. Just open it up. You know, what will be, you know, what will be. Because
right.
It's happening. I mean, whether it's in kind or direct, it's still money, as I see it.
So, do you think there's a special significance of the 1968 Olympic Games?
I think it's the best. I think that Games was the best team ever. Basically, I love it. Excuse me.
So the significance of the 1968 Olympic Games?
I think that it will be forever been burned in my heart for the things that I've done, for the relationships that I developed then and still have today. Those relationships have guided and been an important, played an important role in my life, in my development, the friendships. And it purely affects me as a person. I think that in the next question, the preservation of the 1968 Olympic team, I think if you look at what happened during 1968, how did that relate to the members of the 1968 Olympic team, both black and white, and other sports rather than track and field, the records that were set, the races that were won first, second, and third, and the outcomes of that. I think it's a major Olympic Games that should be recognized forever. And I dare to think that there's any other team where the participants of an Olympic team have kept in contact with each other for 40 years, long enough to make this project happen. The only reason this project is happening is that all of many of us, with dear Tom's fortitude and interest and aptitude, has made this a reality. So I speak.
Yeah. Is there anything else you would like to tell us about?
I really think that this is a 1968 team was a competition, was a group that it goes deeper than just the black athletes. I think that there were many athletes of many different races that were involved in this team that made this 1968 team as great as it turns out today to be. You know, and hopefully the history, the perseverance that we've had to be maintained, to keep in contact. I mean, this is over 40 years, and then Tom Lowe comes up and he does this. I mean, it's and yourself. I think that you should be congratulated, and all the other graduate students involved in this program should really look deeper into it. Deeper. You know, why are you doing this now? I mean, what makes this so special for you to do, other than me telling you? But it is. It's very special. So I told you one story, but I would think it'd be up to you to put the spin and to put the interest that you have into it to merely bring it and the professionalism that you have to bring it up and to bring it out. I think that while you do this, that you should review the movie Fist of Freedom. Okay, and what you get out of that sense, so you can come up with another look or outlook of this whole program. It should not just be comments made by Olympians for 68. I mean, what do you as a person who wasn't even thought of in 68 get out of this? What do you get out of it? What do you want to get out of it? What do you want your kids to get out of it? What do you want or see your children or grandchildren being able to get out of this piece when they read it? Because you got a lot of information. It's all, the only thing you need to do is write it up the right way, script it the right way. You know, script it the right way.
Right.
One way you can look at it, this wasn't about color. It's about that we all are one. That could be a major theme going through 68. It's not about John Carlos Tommy's this and the black athletes boycotting. The better yet, this is all about young one, because I keep on regular contact, and I know many of us do, with our white counterparts, Bill Toomey or Dick Fosbury or many others that we keep in contact, and we are all one. This is a multicultural society, and that was a multicultural team. And some of the best things came from the best people on that team.
Very nice. Well, thank you, Mr. Freeman. Thank you for being so generous with your time and sharing your memories. And just thank you.
Okay. We're from the largest sports organization in Africa a couple years ago, and I developed some major international multi-country sports programs promoting peace for youth, peace education and culture.
Nice. Oh, so is that part of the International Medalist Association?
Yeah, and the site will be up when I get back. I just got to tweak some stuff on it, which are.
Mm-hmm. So you're basically using sport for community development?
Youth development. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I'm studying that topic right now, trying to.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what area?
Well, it's basically the concept itself of using sport, you know, to help communities, to build up communities, using it for peace and development.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I developed a great piece. I developed a great program, and I live in Guinea, Conakry, Guinea, and I developed multi-country programs and national programs for countries, Bamako, Mali, and Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia.
That's awesome. When is your website supposed to be up?
The end of the month, by September. I just got to tweak it. The old one's up, and so it's brand new. But I've even had conferences where Edmund Moses and other Olympians have come over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll be sure to keep an eye out for that for my future studies.
Okay, certainly. Just send me an email. I could... let me see. I'm going to send you a program that I designed for Mali. I basically laid it out. I raised the money. I worked there training people for 3 years, and then what they did was they pulled it off. I put a committee together. It's called the Mali Youth Peace Game. I'll send you that. And it does sports, cultural, education. You know, you'll see it when you open the final report up. This before it's in English. The final one was basic English.
Okay,
so
thank you.
You'll get a sense. Okay, I'll send that to you today once I get back to a computer this evening.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, please enjoy your meal now.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you.